It's time for a Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout, your host. I'm here in the studio with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks to both of you for being here. Every month we come to you and talk about senior issues, and today we're going to be talking about family caregiving. It's Family Caregiver Month this November, declared by the White House. Is that right, Michelle?
President of the United States declared this Family Caregiver Month.
So we're going to be talking about this topic of people caring for family members in their homes. So let's just talk a little bit about the whole issue of caring for people in the home. Doug, before the show, we were talking a little bit about how widespread it is that families are caring for family members. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there's, Michelle has more specific statistics, but in Washington State, we're looking at 850,000 people that are involved in one way or another with family caregiving. And it may be something as little as running errands for another family member, or it may be having that family member in the home and doing a lot of care. It's not identified readily because people don't think of themselves as caregivers. They just think of themselves as a family member, or you know, a spouse or a child or a parent or whatever. So that's part of the difficulty in sort of getting people to understand there's help out there, because when you say caregiver, they don't think of themselves in that light. But there's a tremendous number of people that are out there doing it everywhere.
So, Michelle, what about those other statistics that you have? You were saying, what, 2 out of 5 something?
Actually, 2 out of 5 adults are actually family caregivers. And so that's like 39% of all adults.
Wow.
Are taking care of family members.
So now, even though we're talking about senior issues in general on this show, when we're talking about family caregiving as an issue, are we talking about grandparents taking care of grandchildren too? Is it part of that mix?
Yes, taking care of any family member.
Any family member.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what, the whole thing of defining yourself as a family caregiver is it's kind of, people don't think of themselves as a caregiver, but there's a lot of sort of accumulative stress involved in this whole thing. Can you talk a little bit about what the effect it has on people to be doing this long? Because it's a long-term thing, usually.
Yeah, it is. It's a long-term commitment, and it's one of the most stressful things you could probably do in your life is taking care of a loved one that you see who is failing themselves and having difficulty, and now you're stepping in to help them with that. So not only are you giving up things in your life or working around things in your life to take care of this family member, but you're also seeing their deterioration and helping them through that process. It's amazing how many tasks you do for somebody and you don't really think about it as caregiving. But you know, going to the store for somebody, cleaning their house, washing their dishes when they can't do it is caregiving. And so I think people believe that that is just something that we do, and it is. It's something we do for our family and people that we care about, but it is caregiving, and we need to recognize that we are family caregivers when we do that kind of work.
Well, I think part of the stress of it is the fact that in addition, because I'm in that position myself with regard to my dad, who's 92 now, is that you know, all the other responsibilities in your life remain, but you still have to do these extra things. So it's like you're not only taking care of your own life, you're now sort of duplicating those things in somebody else's life in the same time frame.
Yeah.
So. Right, and what happens too with that is if you're able to even keep your job while you're doing that, because a lot of times that just doesn't work because so much care is needed. But what happens is people that are able to maintain their job and do the caregiving also, they'll go to work, come back, because at work, all they're thinking about is, I got to get back and do this. And pretty soon, some of the, you know, going out with people after work, that stops. Meeting for lunch or coffee, that stops. And it becomes kind of an isolation. Now, luckily, if you can continue working, you still have some social contact. But the other things, the peripheral things, start lessening. And pretty soon, not only the person that needs the care, but the caregiver become isolated.
Well, so that's sort of where your agencies come in. And so for people who are maybe new to the show, Michelle Lewis is Northwest Senior and Disability Services. She handles Oregon. And Doug Schaefer is Olympic Area Agency on Aging. That's the Washington piece. And so together we sort of cover both sides of the Columbia River. So there are actually services available to sort of help people with these issues. So can we talk a little bit about, maybe we can start with you, Michelle. What kind of help is available for family caregivers?
Okay, so on the Oregon side, when we get a referral for a family caregiver support program, we'll visit with the family and find out what kind of care needs are presenting themselves, and try to support the caregiver through that all we can. And one form of support that we can help with quite often is respite time. So time off. Respite is just another word for taking time off and resting, or doing something else that makes you happy. And so we can help people with up to $400 per fiscal year to pay somebody to come in and take care of their loved ones while they go do something else. Sometimes that looks like, you know, them coming in and having somebody come in and do something that they don't like doing. Maybe they don't like to do the bathing, or they don't like the wound care, or they don't, you know, there's parts that they just don't feel comfortable with. They can hire somebody specifically for that, or they can have them come in for blocks of time. And we've had caregivers, you know, take off and go to family reunions and college homecomings and things that they thought they wouldn't get a chance to do again. While they, if loved ones taken care of, they can take off and go do those things. So it's a helpful thing. Plus, we have another little budget that helps with purchasing some items like safety equipment and incontinence supplies. And so you might, you know, be looking at grab bars. You might be looking at that safe return program for people who have dementia who might wander. those things can be helped. We can help pay for those through this program.
And so we've talked a little bit about this process, and we don't have to get it into it in too much depth here. The whole process of when funding like this is available, does then the caregiver do the hiring of whoever they want to bring in, or do you provide people to do that?
Yes, they can. They need to find their home care workers. We can help them with resources to do that. We can help them with home care worker lists. We can give them the names of the private contractors in our areas. But in our program, they can hire anybody they want to hire. So they can hire family, friends, people they trust to be the provider for that program.
Okay. So, Doug, is that sort of sums up some
pretty
of
much,
the Oregon
much, yeah.
side? Okay, what about Washington, Doug? What about?
Well, it's really different with the respite in that the state of Washington, we have to use contracted home care agencies. So, you know, good things and bad things. You know, they've had background checks and trainings and all of that stuff. And respite is one piece of our family caregiver support. We have an assessment tool called T-Care, not that that matters, but basically it measures levels of stress and burdens on the caregiver, and depending upon how stressed out they are, if it's affecting their health or whatever level that comes in, it opens up several different resources for them, respite being one of them. And respite works the same as Michelle said, someone coming into the home so the primary caregiver can go out and do stuff. We also have offer counseling to the caregivers, professional counseling. We have funded exercise programs so that they can, they can get out of the house and sort of burn off some of that, that burn off the burnout kind of thing, you know, exercise and start feeling better. Or maybe they have, you know, they went to a quilting thing once a month or something like that, you know, making opportunity for that. Plus, we have an extensive lending library and support groups and all of that kind of stuff. So there's a broad spectrum of what we can do for family caregivers. And you had mentioned grandparents raising grandchildren. We also have it's called kinship care, or relatives as parents. And that includes grandparents raising grandchildren, or aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews. And with those, we can do a once-a-year help with that. Usually we get approached around August, because school's starting, and all of a sudden you've got to buy things for kids that you haven't done in 30 years maybe. So, but we can help with them to help get the school supplies started up. We've also done sports fees and band memberships and, you know, that kind of stuff for school. So we can hit everything in the middle there.
Well, Michelle, let me just bounce a question back to you. Since it might be kind of intimidating for people to hire someone if they're not used to hiring people, are there agencies in Oregon, if somebody wanted to, that they could go to hire a person that would be, that background checks would have been done? They might pay more, but they could find that. Is that available here in Oregon?
We have one source. It's through the Home Care Commission, and it actually has an online service where they a person has to go through a background check and go through an orientation in order to be on that list. And they can put in their needs and get a list of home care workers that will be available and call them, interview them, check references. You are the employer, so you want to make sure that you've done all the things you need to do to ensure that that's the best selection for you. Then we have two agencies in our area. We have Caring for the Coast and Clatsop Care In-Home Care. Both of those agencies are contract agencies, and they can supply home care workers, and then they are the employer. So they'll come over to your home and assess the care needs, find out what you'd like done, and then they can send out a person to meet that need. And if that person can't, nice thing about them is if that person can't make it when you really need them, they can send out a substitute, a little easier than if you're actually doing this, the hiring yourself.
Well, I was thinking about something we were talking about before the show, which is, you know, that people take this on and they don't really think of it as caregiving, and they don't really quite realize the toll it's taking on them. So maybe we could start with you, Doug. How does a person tell when it's time to ask for extra help outside of themselves?
As soon as they get in that situation, they should start looking for what's available out there. And I think it's important. One of the points is that someplace along the line as a family caregiver, me being in that situation also, is you have to sort of step back and say, you know what, this isn't dumped on me. I'm choosing to do this. And that kind of frees up a little stuff and gets rid of some of the resentment. You're making a choice to help, and that's a good thing. So we need to step back there. But we also begin to see over a period of time where a spouse's identity and role kind of shift, because they, if you ask them, they go, oh, no, you know, I'm just, you know, we've been together 40 years and I'm just taking care of him or her. But as you talk to them in the interview process through our assessment, you begin to realize, or they kind of get their eyes open too, that, you know what, I haven't really felt like the husband or the wife for a long time. I feel like someone who's taking care of someone. And it's sad. But the realization that, okay, if I'm getting to that point, yeah, maybe I need something to sort of give me some distance, give me a break to help me keep going. And most of the family caregivers that we talk to, they don't have a desire to stop doing it. And so if they know that they can do it and remain healthier and maybe get some time on their own so that they can continue to do it, they're all for it.
So, you know, I think part of all folded into this issue is the issue of keeping people in their homes as long as possible that we've talked about. That's kind of a whole thread through the senior care issue. And so, you know, it seems as though, you know, caregivers taking care of themselves helps their family members remain independent for longer. So how does somebody, say somebody's sitting out there and they're listening to us and they're saying, wow, I think maybe I could use some help. What do they do? How do they reach out? Say, Michelle, what do they do with your organization?
They just need to call our office, and they will be hooked up with probably myself. I coordinate that program. So I would be calling them on the phone and talking to them a little bit more to see what needs they have. Sometimes we can just take care of it on the phone. Sometimes a home visit seems like the right thing to do because maybe there's some other options to explore. Maybe they need some more support in their home, and so I'm glad to do that. And we'll also be looking for any other programs that they might qualify for. So maybe the person they're caring for actually could qualify for the Oregon Project Independence Program, or they could qualify for Medicaid in-home services. So we'd be looking for any other possibilities to help support them in that home environment.
And what is Project Independence?
Oregon Project Independence is a state-sponsored program that can help a person with up to 20 hours per month in their home. They can do shopping and personal care. They can do any task that any home care worker would do. So they could do some setting up their medications. They can help them with dressing, bathing, toileting, all those things. And up to 20 hours. And so there's a sliding fee scale involved. So this one really isn't like a Medicaid program where you have to have very low income and very low resources. This one, depending on your income, you may participate in the cost. So you may pay a dollar or two an hour for something that can cost $20 an hour, for instance. But isn't that a nice situation? Because now you can have up to 20 hours, and that might be the thing that keeps you in your home longer. So, and you didn't get into Medicaid, so there's no estates administration type of things involved.
Okay, is there anything like that in Washington, Doug, that Oregon Project
Independence? Not like Oregon Project Independence. I mean, the other programs, the state and federal programs, are all there too, but nothing like that. Years ago, we had one similar to that, but the funding for that went out the window some time ago.
Well, I have a question about something that I attended that was really very valuable, which was a caregiver support kind of class. Do you still, Michelle? Mm-hmm. It was
Powerful
through Northwest.
Powerful Tools for Caregivers.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah,
program?
We do that class a couple times a year, and that is a 6-week, 2.5 hour per week class, and it goes over first identifying yourself as a caregiver and what your stresses might be and how you might manage those stresses. Talks about how to find resources. Works on communication skills, because one of the things that happens with family caregivers is the family is involved. And so you get all these great family dynamics going on. And so how do you communicate effectively with your family members, the doctors, the support people? Now you probably maybe have some social workers coming into your life. How do you communicate effectively and get that, get what you need from those sources? So, it's a couple times a year. It's totally free. And I think we're going to be looking at the next one in probably April of this coming year.
Okay. Well, maybe we can talk about that, you know, in the show when it comes around to that time. We can let people know that that's happening.
I'd like to mention one more thing that we're doing is kind of a pilot. It's actually only in North Pacific County and Grays Harbor County right now from the University of Washington. And it's called RDAD, R-D-A-D. Reducing Disability in Alzheimer's Disease. And what it entails is if someone's taking care of someone else in the home and there's they have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, but they're still mobile, then we are able to go in, and this is free, we're able to go in and work with those caregivers to establish kind of an exercise routine that becomes very routine for the person with Alzheimer's, and it keeps them more active. And the studies have shown that the cognitive decline kind of slows as they're more active. And so it's a series of several workshops with our staff, and then following up with the phone and going over a period of like 9 visits and then letting them go. But we're there for support. And so far we're doing quite a few, but it's also... People say, well, why haven't I heard about that? So we go through this all the time. You need to advertise more. So here we are. We're advertising more. But it's called RDAD, and they can call our office, and we can make those connections for them. So.
Okay, and at the end of the show, we'll give contact information for both Michelle and Doug so that if you are listening to us and you want to know more about anything we've talked about on the show, anytime, you can always contact their organizations and find out things. And we were also talking before the show about the fact that this month, in addition to being Family Caregiver Month, is also National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Michelle, let's just talk a little bit about that, because that's folded into this whole thing. This whole caregiver issue is the issue of Alzheimer's, which is a little different, but it's in there.
Right, right. So a great many caregivers are taking care of people with dementia, whether it's Alzheimer's dementia or other of the many, many diseases that can cause dementia. And that brings in all the stresses of being a caregiver, plus adds a few, because now the person that you're caring for has the confusion going on and mm-hmm. has new risks in their life and may have some behaviors that are difficult to deal with. And so the stress on the caregiver dealing with somebody with dementia is pretty high. And quite unfortunately, with caregivers in general, the unfortunate truth is that sometimes the caregiver gets sick before and dies before the person they're caring for. And recognizing the high stress level is real important at this stage. But yes, Alzheimer's combined with any other disease as far as caring increases the cost and the needs extremely high. So we want to help people with that disease get better care and support the family caregiver.
And so in order to really So there are services probably available specific to Alzheimer's, but people need to go to the doctor and get a diagnosis, Doug? Is that what people, they
depending
have to get an
upon
official
program,
diagnosis?
Depending upon the program, yeah. This is the RDAD thing is a research tool coming out of the UAW, and so they're using it to gather information to see if this could be something that would benefit, you know, statewide. And so, yeah, those type of programs generally have to have like a diagnosis. But obviously, our biggest concern if they call our office and they're taking care of a family member isn't that they have a specific diagnosis. We just want to help the caregiver.
And there's lots of support groups, too, going on. I think in probably both counties, mm-hmm. you probably have some support groups there, too. But for a caregiver just to get involved with a support group, whether it's a dementia support group or just a caregiver support group, can be invaluable. I mean, finding other people that you're not alone doing this, that other people are also doing this, and find out that there's a great many other people doing this, too, can help relieve some of that stress. And there are quite a few people now going, just even online support groups are available. And so, you know, do a little search online for support, caregiver support groups, and you'll find that there are live support groups available online. So if you can't get to a support group, maybe you could do it that way. But find other people who have like interests, and things will, you can get unique ideas on your situation, some new, you know, new incentives, some new ideas. Can go a long ways.
Well, so this is, you know, in many cases kind of a progressive situation, and at some point many caregivers are going to have to make the decision to stop caregiving and sort of hand that role over to someone else, maybe outside the home. So maybe, Doug, do you have any tips? I'll ask both of you this, about how people tell when things have reached the point where they need to hand it over to somewhere else or put their, I mean, it's always the big sort of elephant in the room is when do you decide, you know, when does the person have to give up their independence, if ever? You know, how do you decide?
It really depends on the family dynamics, and it depends on, each situation is unique. I mean, we've all seen people that have all the way through the process of whatever the disease mechanism is, all the way up to having hospice in the home and then passing in the home. Some people are able to do that. Others, because of their own health issues or whatever, reach a point where I can't do this anymore. But, you know, it's usually not a quick decision because they have to wrestle with all the guilt and everything else and blaming themselves, and I should be able to do more, and even though I can't, and that kind of thing. A lot of times it's a safety issue. If, for example, if someone is in later stages of Alzheimer's and they're starting to become aggressive, well, we can't really deal with that anymore, and I can't talk him or her out of that because he doesn't remember who I am. So there's health issues, there's safety issues. Sometimes it's a matter of no matter what I can do in my home, I can't make it assistive enough for him to be safe. So there are those type of issues also. And surprisingly, sometimes the client themselves will tell the family caregiver, I want to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can see what's happening to the caregiver. And also, there's less isolation. If I go to an assisted living or something, there's people around all the time, you know. And so sometimes it is kind of surprising because it's not the caregiver trying to make those decisions. It's whoever they're taking care of saying, it's time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How about you, Michelle? Any thoughts on that whole issue of, you know, when you decide, how you decide when to move into another setting?
I think it's real wise to start asking those questions fairly early into the discussion. If you know that you have, you're caring for somebody who has a progressive disease that's going to need more and more help. So you try to understand yourself, recognize yourself, how far you're willing to go as a caregiver. Is there a line that you just don't think you can cross? But recognize that and know that that's okay. And then start early looking for what the alternatives would be. And so we have something called options counseling that is available to talk to people just about that. What are the different levels of care? How is a person cared for in assisted living versus adult foster homes versus nursing homes? What's possible to do in your home if you hire in-home caregivers? And then what kind of cost is involved with all those options? And also, what does it look like as far as spending down to get onto Medicaid? So if you've got some resources available, knowing just how far to go, especially with couples, where they're starting to get into their savings, and they're good to start talking early to us about. As soon as you start having a payout for any kind of service, then we want to know so that we can kind of draw a line in the sand and tell you this is all you want to spend down to, and the rest we want you to keep because we don't want you to become impoverished and end up right on Medicaid as soon as you get sick. So there is a line to be drawn there, and we'd like to help them understand that. So call our office, ask for options counseling, and we can talk about all the different long-term care options available in our county for that.
So I just have a general question about hospice, you know, that term. Mostly we think of hospice as being for people who have some kind of progressive disease that's terminal. Is hospice just also appropriate for people who are just simply aging and they can't care for themselves, or what's the qualification for that?
Well, the standard is that there has to be a process that's going to result in end of life within 6 months. I assume it's the same over here.
Yeah.
But and you know, sometimes people are on hospice for a year, 2 years because they aren't ready to go yet.
Mm-hmm. graduate hospice and they're fine.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. But that's generally, there has to be a medical diagnosis that within 6 months. So.
Okay. Well, we are getting to the point in the show when it's a good time to give contact information. So these folks, Michelle and Doug, between the two of them, represent tremendous resources for you if you have any issues regarding senior care of any kind, whether you're the person being taken care of or you are the caregiver. So, Michelle, Northwest Senior and Disability Services, how do people get a hold of your organization?
Okay, so the phone number is 503-861-4200. And then online, it's just nwsds.org.
Okay. And Doug?
For our South County office, it's 360-642-3634. Our Raymond office is 360-942-2177. And our website is o3a.org.
And, you know, as I said, both between Michelle, she's Oregon, Doug is Washington. Between the two of them, they represent tremendous resources. And sometimes there are even workshops and things going on that people can from either state can go to. So there's some crossover there where you can, you know, just because you live in Oregon doesn't mean you can attend a great workshop across the river in Washington. If there's something going on that will give you good information that applies across the board. So I think anything else, Michelle, anything else you want to say before we...
I think we pretty well covered it.
Okay. Anything else, Doug, that you...
I'm good.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for tuning into A Senior Moment. You've been listening to the show that we bring to you every month. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Thanks to both of you for being here again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next month on A Senior Moment.